Good day, and welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, with Reiki Master and host, Phyllis Lee Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now, here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today, I'm interviewing Joyce Winnow, who came to Reiki many years ago, and she was living in Hawaii. And there's a special quality of Reiki in Hawaii because the culture there is so fascinating. Of course, the majority of people who live there are Oriental, and then there are the native Hawaiians, and then there are the people who are called Haoles there, or Caucasians. So let's get some impression of Reiki as it's practiced and Reiki as it's described in a different culture. So, Joyce, welcome to the show.
Hi, Phyllis. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Great. Could you tell a little bit about how you got into Reiki?
Well, I got into Reiki because basically, all my life, all I wanted was a sailboat. And when I was looking for a sailboat, when I first moved to Hawaii, I was working with a yacht broker at the time. And we were looking at different sailboats, and I was complaining of some back pain that I was having at the time because I actually had a herniated disc in my back. And I was going and seeking treatment from different people, and it didn't seem to be getting better. So we talked about it, my yacht broker and myself, after many times of looking at different sailboats. And she had mentioned that maybe I would like to try Reiki because it's something that I can do for myself.
Mm-hmm. And how long ago was that?
That was 1988.
1988, wow, that's mm-hmm. a while ago.
Ooh.
So, wow, almost 20 years ago now. So, what happened with your sailboat?
Well, I did buy a sailboat, and I found a sailboat that I really, really loved. And so I had my, actually I found the sailboat after I got second degree Reiki.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I got first degree Reiki and found a little sailboat. And then after about a year and a half, after I got second degree Reiki, I found a bigger sailboat. So the sailboats were always there in my life along with Reiki.
Mm-hmm. So what happened when you got your back treated by Reiki?
Well, when I came to the Reiki class, I had not received a Reiki treatment before then because the Reiki class just happened to be the following week. And I just felt like it's something that I needed to do. And I was very clear about that, and I signed up for the class. So I went to the class. The class was taught by Helen Haberle, and she had been coming to Hawaii teaching Reiki since about 1984. And I remember in the first degree class that I was taking, right around the time of the end of the second day when we were working on the back, exactly right about where I was having my major difficulty, I got this feeling. I don't know if it was a voice or just a knowing, but at that time I heard that don't be concerned because you've done this before. And I felt a lot more comfortable because I think before the previous couple of days during the class, I was a little bit skeptical. I didn't really know what all this meant or if there was really some way that I could heal myself. So there was a lot of doubt and skepticism. So when I was receiving this treatment on my back, I just realized that this is something that was for me, and it felt really very comforting and nurturing, and I was able just to relax and feel the energy coming in and working on my back.
Uh-huh. So when you said something like you felt like this was something you had done before, what did you mean by that?
Well, that was my experience when I was receiving the treatment, the Reiki treatment on my back for the first time. It was like the feeling that it wasn't foreign. It was something that was very natural and that I've done before. I wasn't exactly sure what that meant at the time, and I'm actually not really sure what that means to this day. But that possibly, if there is such thing as other lifetimes, that I have done that before, done the treatment or done hands-on healing somewhere before.
Mm-hmm. So what changes did you notice when you took Reiki? Did you have a change of life? Or lots of people, I was just a few weeks ago talking to Pamela Miles, and we were speaking about primordial consciousness and how Reiki takes and somehow lays a different, opens up a different perspective in people's lives. And I'm just wondering how that's been for you.
Yes, I can agree with that. And for me, my my healing journey began with Reiki and doing a lot of treatment on myself. I worked on myself every day, usually in the morning, and then when I would come home from work, I gave myself a treatment at that time also. And for me, my healing of my physical problem came from an emotional healing, because I had been working commercial construction as a carpenter previously for about 9 years, and I knew that this lifestyle really wasn't very nurturing or supportive to me as a person. So when I was going through my Reiki treatments, I felt that a lot of the energy was going to my emotional self to heal that underlying cause of the physical ailment, which for me was emotional, being not really accepted and actually emotionally abused on the job site working as a woman carpenter on big commercial construction projects.
So if you knew Joyce, you or could see Joyce, she's quite a slight person, and I'm just wondering, that must have been emotionally upsetting, and I'm wondering how that was physically for you. Did you ever feel like you couldn't do the job because of your physical size?
Well, not really. I always felt like the physical work was manageable. There's always some way to deal with large, heavy objects, and a lot of it has to do with leverage, getting your body in the right position underneath the thing that you were carrying. But also, this again was, you know, in my late 20s and early 30s when I had a lot of physical energy. And so it went along with who I was at that time. And I also saw that it was, for me, the most difficult part was being in the environment that was not really supportive. The general feeling with men in construction was to give each other a hard time. And I realized that it wasn't only me being a woman in this environment, but it was also the way they treated each other by, you know, teasing and going out of the way of, you know, making life difficult. So basically they were accepting me and treating me like one of them, which was very difficult.
Dear but difficult.
Yeah.
So in setting this up and your healing process, so do you, could you say that, could you give me a time frame or something where you felt like Reiki really brought you around to another way of being?
Well, I would say within the first month, the first couple, 3 weeks, I could feel something happening within my body. I became more aware of things around me. I was working at that time, and actually I had started, I was on the brink of starting my own business, and after the Reiki class, this also gave me probably the awareness and the courage and the strength to do that. So I realized through this healing process that it wasn't the work that I didn't want to do anymore, because I still really enjoyed the work. I loved working with my hands. I liked being outside. I liked the creative aspect of it. But it was the environment that wasn't good for me. It wasn't supportive, and it wasn't nurturing. So that's when I decided to start my own construction company. And during that time, I was still working on myself in the morning and when I came home from work, and also starting this new construction company. So it was like it was a birth of myself as a new kind of person and how I looked at my craft and my trade in a new way.
And did you were you able to apply your practice of Reiki in your business?
Oh, yes, very much so, very much so. And that's the beauty and excitement of it for me. At that time, what we would do, my business partner, Joanna Tilbury, at the time, was also Reiki trained. And we would, where do we begin? We would Reiki most everything. When we had a set of plans, for instance, and sitting in the building department waiting to get waited on, we would just hold the set of plans, and you could feel the energy going to the plans, and most often everything went really, really smoothly, and actually other contractors and architects couldn't believe that we got our building permits so quickly. For me, that I did a lot of my work in the field, I would go, let's say where I was doing a kitchen remodel, which is a really popular thing to do. So before I would start the work in the kitchen, I would go in and lay my hands on the countertop and in the kitchen cabinets and just sit for a little while and feel the energy, feel the Reiki going into the kitchen cabinets and the countertop, and let the energy kind of communicate and get in touch with what's going to be happening. Because the kitchen has been there, these cabinets have been there for, you know, up to 25, maybe 30 years, and they've been doing a really, really good job. And then all of a sudden somebody comes in to tear them up. I mean, really, that's quite traumatic. So for me, I would like to sit there for a few minutes and just be with the energy of the kitchen and let the energy know, let the cabinets and the countertop and the floor, whatever, know what's going to be happening. And, you know, it just really is amazing to feel the difference and be able to be in the energy that's supportive rather than combative, and that you're always fighting against something. Because after spending these these minutes energetically communicating with these solid objects, it was a much easier to do the work.
Well, that's really amazing. So listen up, all you do-it-yourselfers out there. If you have Reiki, try using Reiki and see if it eases up your work. Well, we'll come back to Joyce right now. It's time for us to stop for a commercial break. So this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. And today we're really looking at how form can absorb essence.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Reiki practitioners everywhere prefer Astrolite massage tables because of optimum portability, leg clearance, easy setup, comfort, and quality. For 15 years, Rampa Enterprises, previously Magic Flute, has been shipping tables around the world to the global Reiki community.
Why wait any longer to get yours? Contact us now through our website at www.portablemassagetables.com, and we'll help you select just the right table to fit your needs. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
Experience higher love, an archangelic journey into ascended joy and authentic living.
Your hosts, Sri Ram Ka and Kira Ra, will assist you to open your heart, expand your love, and be ever present with true joy.
Your journey with Sri and Kira begins right here on the Seventh Wave Network with Higher Love, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy.
Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life, whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office. Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing broadcasts each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto, and I'm back with Joyce Winnow and Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Joyce was just explaining before the station break about her work in the field of remodeling, and especially just taking the experience of remodeling a kitchen. So, excuse me, one of the things that, of course, people do when they learn how to practice Reiki is that they go to, students get very excited and they want to put their hands on everything, and they often ask about plants, and they often ask about their animals, or they ask about car batteries or whatever. But I don't know that anybody's ever asked me about whether or not they can Reiki their kitchen counter. So this is a really brand new field for me, and it's a new way of looking at this other quality of knowing that there's this energy or vibration that moves through everything that's on the planet. So I used to find it really strange when people would say, hold a stone and say, oh, can you feel energy, and talk about the energy and so on. And then they'd hand me the stone, and then I'd think, well,
yeah, it's a stone.
Okay. So now I know that I can, and now that I'm more used to feeling these different energies or vibrations, I can understand what they're talking about. So I guess I'll have to go and Reiki my kitchen counter and see what it tells me.
Good idea.
Yeah, great idea. So now you were working in Hawaii for some years, 17 years?
Uh-huh, almost 17 years.
Yeah, and during that most time you, during most of that time you had Reiki, is that true?
That's correct, yeah.
And so I'm just wondering, Hawaii is really a mix of cultures, and I'm just wondering about your experience with Reiki in Hawaii.
Well, my experience was, again, this was 1988 until I left in 2002. And I always felt very comfortable talking about Reiki. Oftentimes people would know what Reiki was more often than not. The Hawaiians have their connection with mana, the life force energy. The Chinese call it qi, and of course the Japanese call it ki. So we have a lot of different cultures who have this awareness of the energy and being with energy. So I always felt very supported, and oftentimes I spent many years sponsoring and organizing classes for different Reiki masters. And during that time, I met a couple of people that were trained from Hawaii Otakata. And And also a lot of people my age, I'm in my mid-50s now, so, and they grew up with their aunties or their mothers giving them Reiki, as they call it, kind of with an L pronounced instead of an R, like as Westerners pronounce it. But they would have memory of just sitting on the lap of their aunties or their moms and getting Reiki when they didn't feel good or when they were having pains or sores. And had fallen down and hurt themselves, but so it was more of a, I wouldn't say a household word, but it was something that a lot of people had awareness of.
I'm just wondering if you have any stories about students of Hawaii Otakata. Did you meet any older people who were?
Well, I remember, remember one woman came to a Reiki class because she wanted to kind of review and take the class over again because she hadn't been doing her Reiki for many, many years. She was a woman probably in her late 60s, and she received Reiki from Hawaii Otakata because she was having cramps. She was having menstrual cramps. And so she took the Reiki class, so this was maybe probably 50 years ago, if not 40 years ago. And she took the Reiki class and worked on herself and put her hands on her abdomen. And her cramps didn't bother her after a few treatments. So she actually forgot about Reiki. So it's kind of the thing of we never know what we miss when we have Reiki because we don't get these ailments. So she had heard about people teaching Reiki again and came to the class and wanted to reintroduce herself. And my Reiki teacher said, well, if Hawaii Otakata had taught you Reiki, you don't need to take the class again. So why don't you sit through the class and start working on yourself and doing your self-treatments again, and you start connecting with the energy. Which she did, and she was very, very grateful. And after a few months, she came back and took the second degree Reiki. And this was after she had taken Reiki, you know, almost 40 years before.
Wow. Yeah. So this thing that my grandmother used to say, well, you have Reiki for a lifetime, mm-hmm. that really was true.
Totally. Huh? I totally can understand that. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Just put your hands on yourself again and it starts to flow.
Great. Mm-hmm. Great. And so what about finding Reiki so common? Like it seems as though in some of the communities that I've been in, the concept of Reiki is very unusual, and it's very different to feel like this. The people that you were talking to were like people who were at least second generation knew about Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how did that come about, the second generation?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure, you know, specifically, but I think it's just the general acceptance of the knowing that there's something else out there besides the physical world. And
can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, I can only make suppositions because I'm not really connected that much with the culture, but a lot of people in Hawaii of the Japanese and the Chinese culture anyway are Buddhist religion, and more so than you find on the mainland. And perhaps it's, you know, with their spiritual understanding that they're taught to be a little bit more open than we of the Western mind.
Do you think that do you think that they need to have something be proven? Do you think that their open mind includes accepting a kind of mystery of life, or knowing that there's more to life than we see physically? Or
yes.
I mean, is this
I think there's more. In so far as there's more of a trust with their experiences. And I feel we all have experiences of intuitive nature of listening to our inner selves and whatnot, and that we negate it, we don't listen to it. And it's just my perception that these other cultures are a little bit more open to it, and that they're ready to listen to that intuitive part a little bit and trust it a little bit more than we're taught to.
Uh-huh. So did you learn this, or were you inspired by them then?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Because for me, this was, when I took the Reiki class, this was pretty much my introduction to a real connection with my intuitive self, my spiritual nature, and it was a practice that allowed me to actually feel a connection with the universe. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just knowing, again, back to the last example of just feeling that there's energy in kitchen cabinets. And, you know, again, that brought out, for me, the precept of, you know, show gratitude to every little living thing. And what is a living thing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it expanded your mind into
definitely
this other world.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So then I understand that you not only organize classes for people to come and teach, but you also did treatments
yes,
on other people.
Yes, I did. I spent a lot of time, probably about 10 years, doing work in the community, in the Reiki community, on people that I knew that had taken the Reiki class. And I would just, you know, meet up with them, and when they were having difficulty, give Reiki treatments to them, or support people when they went to the hospital, and went very often to hospitals to give Reiki treatments for, you know, post-op or, you know, big surgeries, little surgeries. I also saw a lot of people in their healing process with chemotherapy. And in 1997, I actually started a public practice, what we would call a public practice, where I gave, I was available to do treatments to people that were not just my friends and relatives.
And, well, I'm just wondering, something caught my attention.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about giving Reiki treatments to people who already had Reiki, and perhaps some of our listeners want to know, well, if you have Reiki and you can treat yourself, why would you get a treatment from somebody else?
Good question. Good question. And my teacher has told me that there's three forms of treatment in this practice. There's self-treatment. There's treatment of other people, where you put your hands on someone else and give a treatment. And there's also this part of receiving a treatment. And for me, I always have to be open to this aspect of actually allowing myself to be open and receiving a full treatment, because of this aspect of being able to give myself a treatment. But I feel it's very important to be able to just lay down and receive totally from somebody else. In that dynamic, something really very profound happens.
Mm-hmm. And you can you articulate that profundity?
The profundity. Just basically on a physical level, when you're giving yourself your own treatment, I think there's always an awareness of, you know, how your hands are, and if you're, you know, comfortable and whatnot, and is it time to move and to go to the next position. Whereas if you're receiving a treatment from someone else, your mind is more apt to go into the surrender mode.
Uh-huh.
And that is when we can really receive.
That's great. Joyce, I'm just going to have to cut you off because we're a little running over time for our station break. So this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Are you tired of carrying a heavy wooden massage table around? Is your back sore, or do you have imprints of cables and braces on your kneecaps after sitting and giving a Reiki treatment? Try a lightweight Astrolite massage table for maximum comfort. Contact us, Paul or Upasana, at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
For Spirit of Film Conversations, this is Randall Barrow. Hello, Seventh Wave listeners. I hope you'll join me each week as I explore how movies are changing the way we think, live, and dream. Spirit of Film Conversations showcases today's independent and visionary filmmakers and their personal and artistic journey to bring their vision to the big screen, television, DVD, or streaming video on the internet. Spirit of Film Conversations is also for people who make movies, whether the established film professional or the aspiring filmmaker. My show also celebrates the motion picture's unique ability to affect us emotionally, intellectually, even spiritually. So if you want to hear the real behind-the-scenes story of the most amazing and visionary films being made today and find out how you can use movies to empower you in your everyday life, join me each week on Spirit of Film Conversations every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Also, check out my website at spiritoffilm.net to find out more about the movies I talk about each week. And thanks for listening to Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change.
Discover how to create the reality you desire, manifest your destiny, and find your authentic self. Meet your angels, teachers, and guides along the way. Explore how karma is created, how contracts can be cleared, and how to heal past life and ancestral pain to clearing your path toward ascension in this lifetime. Learn how to make this experience joyful and not frightening. Jean Adrian's book, Soul Adventures, is available for purchase on her website at Amazon.com and in your local bookstore. She also created a card deck, the Inner Speak Cards, which enables fast and simple karmic clearing sessions. They are available for purchase on her website at www.innerspeak.com. That's www.innerspeak.com.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. And today I have the privilege of being with Joyce Winnow, who's a Reiki student and master. And she came to Reiki in Hawaii while looking for a sailboat and has many adventures in her own life with Reiki. And I'd like to ask you about your adventures in teaching. And I don't know, maybe adventures is not quite the right word, but it seems like an adventure to me, a spiritual adventure as well as a physical one. I understand that you also were involved in a program that went to Kalapapa and treated people who had leprosy. And so Hawaii has this very long history of having this places where people with leprosy have been, well, at first they were sort of banished to
definitely,
these places.
Definitely, and now
I don't know if it's a choice that they live there, but at least their leper colonies are still there. I'm not quite sure if this is a politically correct term or not.
Well, actually, politically correct, it's referred to as Hansen's disease.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And in the late 1850s, under King Kamehameha, it was designated that one portion of the island of Molokai on the north shore of the peninsula of Kalaupapa was to receive all the, at that time, lepers, the people that had leprosy, and actually the government also made it a crime to have this disease. So if you were caught and you had leprosy, you were immediately arrested and put into exile on the island of Molokai.
That's really strange. What was behind that?
Well, it was actually it was a law to enforce the protection of the people who did not have the disease, because at that time it was very communicable, and they didn't actually know how to stop it, and thought that it was communicated by touch. But now that we know it is a viral disease, and there are drugs that were that came about in the early to mid 1960s, the sulfone drugs, that made it more under control. And the patients themselves don't look at themselves as lepers, because they are not the disease. They are people who have Hansen's disease. And Hansen is the name of the man who developed and discovered the sulfone drugs that helped to delay and alleviate some of the symptoms of the disease.
Mm-hmm. So how long did you... Well, were you with this program?
Right. We actually came first to Kalaupapa in 1993. My teacher had gone there before the previous year, just to make connections with the staff and the nuns who work there. There was an order of St. Francis nuns from Syracuse, New York, that worked and ran the hospital there. And a couple of the nuns that were living and working there had invited us to come, and they wanted to take the Reiki class for themselves and to be able to work on the patients, and also to see if there was something that Reiki could do for the departed, for the spirits, actually, that still roamed around the land in Kalaupapa.
Mm-hmm. So what was your experience with this?
Well, it was really quite remarkable, very intense, very palatable. It was an opportunity for me to be able to work in a community upon their invitation, because they saw that something needed to be done, and to work with them and to bring some kind of opening, an energetic peace and healing to an area that has suffered for over 100 years. I, again, had no history or no idea or any awareness or idea of what was going to happen. But when we were there, there was 12 of us, 12 or 13 of us that went the first time in 93. And basically what we had done was create a energetic circle in different spots on the peninsula to be able to invite the spirits that were there to be able to come in and heal. So we would sit in a circle, much like oftentimes we sit in a regular Reiki circle, and start doing Reiki and giving Reiki energy into the circle and inviting any of the spirits and the lost souls who were still hanging around, kind of in that trapped situation, to come forward and enter into the energy of Reiki.
Mm-hmm. And then what would happen?
A lot of...
I mean, are you okay in talking about this?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of woo-woo.
Well, it is a little bit woo-woo, but for me, it was very real, very palatable, and a lot of people, most people had some experience of, of the energy working with the spirits. I remember one person had the experience of a spirit coming in, into the circle, and then there was a little baby. She was holding a baby in her lap, and she held it for a little while, and then she felt it being released. We actually had somebody running a video tape machine at the time, and it was interesting. You could see little white forms running in and out, and then that was for about 30 seconds, maybe up to a minute, and then the machine broke. and it didn't record anything after that.
Wow, that is
really
strange.
It really was. And so for me, one of the most important aspects was being able to participate in this healing circle and inviting the spirits to come in to be able to make kind of a transition, because from what I experienced being on the island, that there is just so much trauma, so much emotional separation during the time that these people were physically living on the island, that when they passed away, that the energy still was kind of trapped, because you have to realize on this little peninsula there's over 7,000 people buried there over, you know, in less than 100 years. And that's quite a dense population of graves. Yes, it is. And to this day, that unless you're invited with a written invitation, you can't go there. Mm-hmm. And if you're under 16 years of age, you can't go there either. So during all this time, you know, as the colony grew, and you know, people, men and women, would meet and eventually get married and have children. As soon as their children were born, they were taken away from them.
Oh my God!
They were sent away to family or friends on different islands, in the whole idea to protect them so they would not get the disease. So number one, not only were they in exile themselves for the disease from their family and friends, but when they finally had children, they were immediately taken away too. So there's this whole feeling and history of separation.
Wow. And did you ever, I mean, I assume that you treated people actually hands-on also.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? Did that feel different for you than other people in your that you treated in your own home?
Yes, it felt very different, because I treated several of the patients, and they were always very touched because, well, they're the untouchables.
Mm-hmm.
And traditionally, you don't touch people with leprosy, you don't touch people with Hansen's disease. And somehow I just totally trusted Reiki, and I totally knew that I would be just fine. And to touch them and put my hands on their skin, and their hands and feet were very deformed, and of course their faces and noses would be missing and ears would be missing and whatnot. But for me, I made this connection between who they are as a human being and being able to connect with them in a physical way also.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's very beautiful, very profound, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, amazing. And were you able to, were they able to have relief from pain or emotional?
Right. I think the biggest part that I could tell from what they had shared, that they felt relaxed, of course, and they felt relief from their pain, which is always constant. But also they just felt this big relief of being able to be held and touched.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Did they take Reiki also?
None of the patients did, no.
Uh-huh.
Several people, the staff that worked at the hospital and the minister that worked there did.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So interesting.
Yes.
And is the program still going on?
No. No, it's not. I think there's people that are still living there that have Reiki, but there's nothing that I know of at this time that is an active Reiki program there.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Well, a lot to think about. And it's now time for another station break, and we're going to be back with our closing segment with Joyce in just a few minutes. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Reiki treatments can be done almost anywhere, on the floor, on a bed, or even on the dining room table. but I certainly prefer giving and receiving treatments on my comfortable, lightweight Astrolite massage table. Contact us for more information at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
Being here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss being here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
The Unity Radio Hour, more than a radio show. The Unity Radio Hour is leading-edge spirituality, which will help you discover new ways to enhance your life, your relationships, your career, and more. Plan to spend every Wednesday afternoon with your host, Mindy Ottlin, for the Unity Radio Hour, broadcasting live on the Seventh Wave Network at 12 p.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Central.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto, and I'm back with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today we're talking with Joyce Winnow, a Reiki master who lived in Hawaii and had really beautiful and profound experiences there with a very unique situation with people with Hansen's disease and meeting people who had Reiki in their families. In our last generation, which of course for most of us is really surprising because we're in our 50s and 60s and 70s and we're just discovering Reiki. So, Joyce, I want to go back to these years that you spent on Kalapapa. Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah, on Kalapapa, and I'd like to ask you, what remains of this experience for you? And what have you integrated, you know, into your life or into maybe your attitudes from this experience with these people?
Lovely question, yeah. For me, I think one of the important things to remember is that Reiki can do no harm. And that's also not just somebody that I'm giving a treatment to, but also Reiki can do no harm to me. I really feel that that to be true. And after this experience, I know it to be true. Some of the work that we did in the spirit world oftentimes can be rather frightening. And I always aligned myself or remembered for me working with the Reiki energy and trusting that it was a balanced energy and knowing that it will do no harm.
So a lot of people talk about protection, and I'm just wondering, did you feel yourself protected?
I did, and I didn't actually go out of my way to do any kind of other ritual to seek this kind of protection. I just felt it around me because the energy oftentimes was very, very palatable, very, very much there. And for me, it just felt really natural and healing and nurturing.
What did you do when it became scary?
When it became scary, I would invoke the symbols of Reiki and feel the energy kind of escalating and being there and supporting me.
Well, I know that this is a little bit on the edge for some people because they feel like Reiki is a physical healing technique, or some other people would like to sort of shy away from these experiences. But I know that for many listeners out there, and for many of the Reiki practitioners, these things happen, and sometimes they take us by surprise.
Yes,
because we're not really used to having these kind of experiences in what I would call the non-physical world.
Yes.
So
I surely wasn't. I was a very physical person and always in the physical world. So.
And this.
Well, it
opened
really,
a doorway.
It opened a doorway totally, but it also brought it into my physical world because again, I could feel the energy. I could feel the spirits, and I could feel what happened when we created this healing circle. So it was a bridge. So there was not the separation between out there and in me. It really brought it together. It brought it inside of me. Whatever that absolute energy or the absolute universe is, it gave me a total experience of it in my body.
And was that the same for all the other people who were there?
Oh, yes, yes.
And do you feel like there's strength in numbers?
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, definitely. When you're dealing with numbers in the spirit world, yeah, I think it was handy to have a large group there.
Handy?
Handy. Comforting.
Is that
comforting.
A pun on words,
yeah.
Handy?
Yeah.
And do you, now that you've moved to the mainland of the United States, do you sense a difference in how Reiki is held in our sort of American sort of world as it compared to Hawaii, which is often also very much known for its sort of healing energies?
Yes. A lot of people go to the islands and spend time in their own personal healing. So that is part of the feeling of Hawaii too. So being on the mainland, yeah, I feel a difference because number one, people aren't familiar with the word. It's a foreign word, whereas in Hawaii it's not that foreign because it's a little bit Japanese, but then
well, it's a lot Japanese.
Well, it's a lot Japanese. most people are very comfortable with Japanese names. Like you don't have to, you know, for Furumoto, everybody knows how to spell Furumoto,
right?
For example, but on the mainland, you always probably have to, you know, pronounce and spell your word, your last name twice.
Right.
So just in the language of it, it's different, and I feel the awareness of our Western culture, Western-based kind of culture, is more in the physical, definitely more in the physical, and to actually stop and give honor and attention to something within our whole own human life, our whole human being that is not physical, is very different for most people.
And if people wanted to go to Hawaii and sort of touch part of the history of Reiki, is there some place they could go, or or what would you what would your advice be?
I would say just get an idea of the people and the feeling, and you know, if you would spend spends a couple of weeks there, you get in your body the pace. It's a slower pace. It's less stressful because you don't have to worry about keeping yourself warm at winter and things like that. And get to know the people and what aloha means, what mana is for the Hawaiians, what is chi and what is ki, just by, you know, being with the people.
So what is aloha for you?
What is aloha?
Yeah.
Aloha is a feeling of welcoming everyone into one's heart with compassion and understanding of our oneness and also our differences, and to be open and to hold those differences.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a lot like what I've learned in my life with Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, we're at the end of our time with Joyce, and it's time for us to say aloha, because they also use in Hawaii aloha to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
That's true. Aloha nui loa, which means a very grand and big aloha.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And aloha to you, Joyce. Thank you very much for being on the program and for sharing your very special experiences through your Reiki practice.
Well, thank you, Phyllis. It's my pleasure to be here.
Good. So, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. It's been a wonderful time with Joyce to listen to her experiences in her very special way, very special experiences of treatment. And we'll be back next week with more stories and more inspiration. Good night.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network, and discover how you can find balance from within.